The announcement is 3 minutes ago. I've got it off the Pac-12 website and Ashley Adamson. They're going to have the press conference at the top of the hour, so it's official. CEO group votes unanimously. 7-game conference only starts November 6th. Championship game December 18th. Practice can start immediately with necessary local public health approvals. Men and women's basketball starts November 25th. So I am hearing this for the first time. I'd imagine you are hearing it, if not for the first time, relatively recently. What do you think?
I'm at Oregon practice right now. What are you talking about?
my bad.
Hey, guys, Tyler, look out! Dwayne Johnson's open! Okay, I'm back. Sorry.
All right. So what are they saying?
I'm getting escorted out right now. So let me call you back.
All right.
People didn't know they were turning in for an Abbott and Costello routine, did they? That's awesome, I guess. I have mixed feelings about it. I hope people are doing this for the right reasons. I hope people know what they're doing. I hope the kids stay healthy, regardless of whether or not they're in the age group, and that they're healthy and that it may not affect them, and that, you know, one or two kids don't get seriously ill, or heaven forbid, one die. I hope that kids don't catch it and give it to their family. I hope that everything goes well for everyone's sake, because if this goes poorly across the nation, everyone's going to look like misguided, short-sighted, greedy clown.
Well, I'll tell you what, every time there's been an announcement, I'm like, hey, plans are great. You need one in place in case you got to make a move. But like we learned from day one in March, you could plan all you want. The virus still decides what we're going to do. So,
exactly.
All right. Let's.
Exactly. There's a lot of talk, too. I mean, you know, health officials are saying we're entering the fall. We're entering the flu season. The flu season is the flu season for a reason, because it's the fall. This is a variety of, you know, the flu, and we're going to probably see a rise in cases if we're not social distancing, wearing masks. So, you know, football is coming back at a time when things could actually get a lot worse. So hopefully not. We'll see, though.
Yeah, and one of the announcements said, no fans for sure. That's not even on the table. But like I said, you can make all the plans you want. The bottom line is, we as Americans do not have a grip on this virus yet. It doesn't matter what anybody says, from the number one guy in the country to your buddy hanging out socially distanced at the bar. So there you go.
Right.
All right, let's start with some goofing off. 8 years ago tonight, the third start of Russell Wilson's career, it looks like they're dead in the water. They had managed 7 points all game against the Packers, and we witnessed the fail Mary. What do you remember about just the pure zaniness of that one?
Oh yeah, I haven't thought about that in a long time. That was replacing refs, right?
Yep, and one ref touchdown, the other ref simultaneously waving it off.
Right. I think everyone talked about this at the time, but it was like, you know, the true regular officials were probably rolling around laughing their butts off, right? This mass confusion created. I think that entire couple week stretch really showed how valuable the officials are. And that was, you know, that was the play. That was the one play where it's like, wow, look at the mass confusion. Not only was there confusion, but they ultimately got it wrong anyway. I don't think it was a touchdown. Never did at the time, still don't today. I know most Seahawks fans do, but whatever. But yeah, that was a rather crazy, bizarre moment in NFL history, really. And then soon after, the officials came back, right?
Oh, yeah. I think they were like, yeah, we might need these guys. And I'll tell you what, that would have dropped them to 1-3. Instead, they made the playoffs. But anyway, last Sunday night, just it looked like it's over. Then Newton brings the Pats down. They score outside the 2-minute mark, have all their timeouts. They stop. They get the ball back. They're on the 1-yard line. Man, there was a lot to unpack there. So that last play, was it telegraphed, or was it just a great play by the Seattle defense?
I think it was a little bit telegraphed. I think he basically, you know, New England was saying, okay, we're going to run at you with Cam Newton, our 6'6", 250-pound Adonis. He's already done it before. you have to think about, though, he could fake it because he's already faked and thrown a pass before, right?
Right.
For a touchdown. So, clearly, to me, it looked like Seattle was hell-bent on we're going to take Cam out, and if he play actions and someone gets open, so be it. But it's one of those things where you're either going to go right, going to go left, and it's basically mano-a-mano, man. who's going to be tougher at the point of attack? Who's going to make the blocks? Who's going to not get blocks? Who's going to make a play? And Seattle, you know, they blew it up a little bit. And, you know, but I still maintain that had Cam Newton recognized that where he was headed was, I mean, I don't know how he didn't recognize it because he tried to jump over the fullback and the edge guy who came off the edge, I can't remember who it was. Had he just recognized that, put his right foot in the ground, planted, and went lateral, he gets outside and scores. You know, but that's a decision you have to make in a split second because he has a target area where he's headed. And then if that's not there, you have to make a split-second decision to change direction, which running backs are more, you know, deft at doing than the quarterbacks are. And he didn't make it. But the touchdown was there. But give Seattle credit. They blew up where he wanted to go, and that's the first thing you have to do as a defense.
Wow, what a game.
That was a great football game. It can look amazing. And the whole time I'm watching that game, I'm thinking, yep, this is what I was afraid of because Trubisky's had one good quarter in the first game, a good first half this past week, but the second half he wasn't very good. And my biggest fear was that he was going to continue to be the Trubisky we've seen and that Cam Newton was going to go into New England and rip it up. And the Bears blew, and the Bears got him for cheap. They could have got him for next to nothing. And if Cam Newton goes on and leads that team to the playoffs and Trubisky stinks, and the Bears don't make the playoffs, everyone in Chicago should be fired.
Okay. Talking with Aaron Fentress. And by the way, you don't just mean the team. You mean anybody who has a job in the city limits of Chicago.
Everyone within the city of Lynn. No, okay. Everyone in the Bears, coaching staff, and front, not coaching staff. Well, forget the assistants. This is the head coach and the GM. But my point is not that you stuck with Trubisky. It's that Cam Newton, a former MVP, who's clearly far superior, is sitting there with no job, and you didn't even entertain it that we know of to bring him in. And if he does well and Trubisky sucks, everyone's got to go.
All right. Talking with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. I feel like you and I, very early last year, started tracking the career of DK Metcalf. And I know it's week two, but 23 yards a catch. I mean, one-on-one, he's almost unguardable. Accurate to say, while I'm not going to put him up there with DeAndre Hopkins and Julio Jones, but man, that young guy is climbing the charts as a pretty serious threat.
Yeah, he's getting better and better each week, each month, season to season. He's going to be adding more routes to his repertoire. The route he ran the other day, we dipped inside, pushed up vertical, and then broke to the corner. I don't remember. I saw it covered every game last year. I don't remember him running that route at all, let alone. So that doesn't mean he didn't, right? I mean, he could have ran it, and I wasn't paying attention because the ball didn't go to him.
Right.
But that's, you know, that's a more complicated route because you're getting inside the press coverage, you're pushing, you got to push vertical and then break to the corner at a certain time. Otherwise, you mess up the timing with the quarterback, and Russell Wilson laid it right in there for him. And so when you have a quarterback like Wilson who's so good at throwing the ball downfield, and you have a guy who runs as fast as he does and is as physically as imposing as he is, if you scheme things right, you get him in the one-on-one situations, he's going to be virtually impossible to deal with. Because even if you have good coverage on him, your corners in the NFL, I mean, what, they're 5'9 to maybe 6'1 and then maybe 180 to 210. That's all combined smaller things than this guy, and he's so much bigger and stronger that he's going to win the one-on-one. So he's not quite Randy Moss because Randy Moss was faster, but he's bigger, thicker, and stronger than Moss was. So, yeah, this is going to be a scary combination for the rest of Russ's career in Seattle. And NFL teams have to deal with this because they're just getting started.
No, that guy is beast mode on the outside. The injury bug. We talked about the secondary, the impact of Jamal Adams, and now we learned Marquise Blair, his safety counterpart, who's a heck of a player, done for the year. We saw the former Duck, Ugo Amadi, step in there. So be it testing the depth. I mean, what's your read on how big a blow this is to a defense that's not exactly been stellar?
Yeah, that hurt. You know, they need pass rushers. They brought in a couple. You didn't bring back Clowney, and you lose Urban like that, who, you know, on paper is your best pass rusher, most proven veteran pass rusher. And then Blair had taken a huge step from last year. Clearly, you had cleared out McDougal when you brought in Adams. And then you had a competition at the nickel where Amadi was in that competition. Blair ultimately won out and was performing well. They had, you know, they're like, people were saying, hey, gotta get this guy on the field. He's that good. They picked him the second round for a reason last year. And then now he's out, which puts pressure on Amadi. Now, Amadi had won and lost and won and lost the nickel job last year. And so now he's thrust back into that position with Blair out. He definitely has the ability, but it's not a job that he's officially sort of, you know, taken and taken the reins on and ridden off into the sunset. So that's a question mark for them. They don't know for sure if he's ready to handle that for an entire season or if he could get exposed. He's still pretty young. So, yeah, that's pretty devastating for a defense that already sort of came into the season, you know, with a lot of question marks.
A couple final thoughts for Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. Let's get to some hoops. The Chicago Bulls have a new coach, Billy Donovan. had some success with OKC, but I saw one report. Since Phil Jackson left, he's just the second coach to actually have NBA head coaching experience. The only other guy was Scott Skiles for about 3 years in the mid-2000s. So the Bull fan in you, what are you thinking?
I like it, man. I think, you know, you go out and you get a name who's had some success. Yes, he has won a championship, but, you know, he has won a championship because when he was with OKC and had Durant, he lost to the Warriors. You know, one of the greatest teams ever. It's like, that's not, they got to the West Finals. I mean, that's not like he did a bad job. You're not going to have that kind of talent in Chicago, but at least you have a proven head coach who knows his way around the league and knows what he's doing. And that was the one criticism, the main criticisms of John Paxson and Gar Foreman was that they were always trying to be almost too cute with their hires. You know, it was like, you can't blame them for Tim Floyd, that was Krause, but, you know, the Skiles hire was actually pretty solid. Then they went with, I can't remember what they fired Skiles for. Was it Del Negro?
Del Negro only had front office experience, no head coaching.
Yeah, it was a former point guard, player thing. You know, in the NBA, we've seen a lot of people never coach before and become head coaches, so that's not a total reach. But again, it was like, okay, if you're going to be cute with your hire, to me, that's a cute hire. When you hire a player who's never coached before, you're saying you see something that no one else does, right? And so it better work. It didn't. It was a disaster. As a matter of fact, Paxson and Del Negro almost got into a fight one day over playing time with Joakim Noah. It was so ridiculous. You know, and then, you know, Thibodeau was a great hire. That worked out. But then they alienated each other. So the one main coach you had, you couldn't get along with him. And then they go to
Hoiberg.
Actually, at least kind of the name. Hoiberg, yeah! And they were going on and on about his motion offense, getting guys open, we're going to run, and we're going to do this, and blah, blah, blah. They were awful. Awful. They didn't look like they had any clue what they were doing. And then the last one, this guy at Boylan, it was like, everyone is, and I listen to a lot of Chicago podcasts, and people were freaking out. And I've always liked to give him a chance, guy, but it was a disaster, and they kept supporting him. And then they extended him. It's like, what are you doing? So the fact that the new regime went out and said, we're not screwing around with head coach. We're not going to hire someone that no one's ever hired before. We're going to be smarter than everyone else. We're going to find the best name, the best coach on the market, who's available, and we're going to go get him and hope he can help develop some of these young players we have. But they have some decent talent. You just need someone who knows what they're doing so you can coach them up.
I actually like Donovan a lot, so they're dead. Anyway, lastly, the game tonight, Lakers and Nuggets. One of the joys of really having no interest rooting-wise is you can kind of jump on a bandwagon. I mean, so Denver's down 3-1, they beat the Jazz. They're down 3-1, they beat the Clippers. They're down 2-0. They make this a series. At the very least, you got to like the onions on these guys, right?
Yeah. No, this is a classic. Like we've seen too many teams, contending teams, be built, you know, with free agency and trades, right? I mean, look at the Lakers. They're, you know,
right.
Anthony Davis and LeBron James magically end up in L.A., right? but, you know, you and I have also watched the basketball online. We remember the times when teams would build, you know, through the draft and maybe a minor trade, not a, you know, come get a major superstar like my Bulls did around Jordan. They built around Jordan. So we've seen that. This Denver team, is I think they're gonna be in a position, I think, to add as well moving forward with some depth moves. But they've got a great young core. They are fearless. They are tough. And, you know, they're being built in a very organic way. And, you know, the experience they're gaining is going to make them a player down the road. Well, not down the road now. I mean, they're in the West Final, right? Yep. But they're going to really become a force as we move forward. And I'm really excited to see. Because I want to see a team. I mean, I shouldn't discount the Warriors. The first Warriors championship was built organically.
Right.
Can't forget that. Right. I want to see that. I want to see teams be built through the draft. And then, yeah, you make some tweaks. And then you build a contender. That's how I believe things should be done. So I'm rooting for Denver. You know, actually, I picked the Lakers to win it all, but I would rather see the Lakers lose and see Denver win just because I want to see an organically built team get back to the top.
All right. Fun stuff. I guess next week we'll have more details about Pac-12 football. But anyway, folks, he's Aaron Fentress on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress for the Oregonian. Always appreciate the time, my friend. Be well, be safe, and we'll chat again next week.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Take it easy.